Chapter 7. The Kingdom of the Black Isles.
"You must know, my lord," said the unfortunate young man, "that my father was the king of this country. This is the Kingdom of the Black Isles. It takes its name from the four small neighboring mountains. They were formerly our four islands. The capital was located on the spot now occupied by the lake you have seen. My story will tell you of the reason for those changes. The king, my father, died when he was 70 years of age. I married shortly afterward. I chose my cousin as my queen. We were greatly in love, and nothing could exceed the harmony of our marriage. This lasted for 5 years. Then I began to feel that the queen no longer returned my affection. One day, after dinner, while she was at the bath, I lay down upon a sofa. Two of her ladies came and sat beside me, fanning me against the heat. They spoke in whispers, thinking I was asleep. But as my eyes were only closed, I heard all of their conversation. One of them said to the other, 'Is the queen not wrong to not love so charming a king?' Her companion said, 'Certainly, I do not understand why. Neither can I think of why she goes out every night and leaves him alone. How is it possible that he does not know?' The first replied, 'Alas, how should he? Every evening she places the juice of a certain herb in his drink. It makes him sleep so soundly all night that she has time to go where she pleases. As the sun rises, she comes and wakes him by the smell of something she puts under his nose.' You may guess, my lord, how surprised I was at this conversation. Yet I had to control my feelings. I pretended to wake without having heard a word. The queen returned from the bath, and we dined together. She presented me with a cup full of my usual drink. Instead of drinking this, I went to an open window and secretly poured it out. I did this without her noticing, and returned to our chambers. Soon after, believing that I was asleep, she got up. She said so loudly that I could hear it distinctly, "Sleep, and may you never wake again." As soon as the queen was gone, I rose quickly. I took my scimitar and followed her. She passed through several gates, which opened as she said some magical words. The last one she opened was that of the garden. I stopped at this gate to avoid her notice. Watching her, I saw her enter a little wood within the garden. Its paths were guarded by a thick fence. I managed to enter by another way. Then, hiding myself, I saw her walking with a man. I listened closely and heard her speak to her companion. "I do not deserve to be criticized by you," she said. "You know the reason well. If the past proofs of my affection are not sufficient to convince you of my honesty, I am ready to give you others. If you desire, I will convert this great city and this magnificent palace into frightful ruins inhabited only by wolves. You need but ask. You know my power." As the queen finished these words, the man and she came to the end of the path. They turned to enter another path and passed right before me. Having drawn my scimitar earlier, I struck him on the neck. He fell to the ground. Thinking that I had killed him, I left quickly, sparing the queen. The queen did not realize who had struck her lover. I had given him a deadly blow, but she preserved his life by using her spells. I could hear her cries of sorrow as I went back to the palace. As soon as I had reached my chambers, I fell fast asleep. The next morning I rose and dressed and went out to meet my court. At my return, the queen presented herself before me. She was dressed in mourning, and her hair was untidy. She said, "I have come to beg your majesty not to be surprised to see me in this condition. My deep sorrow is due to news of 3 upsetting events." Pretending ignorance, I said, "Alas, what are they, madam?" She replied, "The death of my dear mother and that of my father, killed in battle, and of one of my brothers, who has fallen off a cliff." I was displeased she used these lies to hide the true cause of her sadness. Frowning, I said, "Madam, I assure you I feel for your sorrow. Cry on. Your tears are proof of your tenderness. I hope with time and reflection I may help to reduce your pain." She retired into her chambers and spent a whole year in mourning. At the end of that period, she begged permission to construct a retreat within the palace for herself. I consented, and it was built. She called it the Palace of Tears. When it was finished, she moved the object of her love there. She had prevented his dying with potions and continued to give these potions to him daily. Yet with all her spells, she could not cure him. He could not move or talk. In all ways, he seemed as though dead, but for the life in his body.